It's 8:19. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Summit County Council met yesterday and took a trip to the Three Mile Canyon landfill to start things off. On the phone with a recap of the meeting, I have County Council Member Kim Carson. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So any news from the site visit to the landfill?
Yes. First, I got to say I'm really impressed with Tim Loveday and the work he's doing under the supervision of Derek Gradke, who's our public works director. Since he's been on board, he's just done a lot to really look at future planning for growth in the landfill, how we can maximize space there, how we can do it in an environmentally responsible manner. And so that's kind of what we took a look at yesterday. They put in what's called a leachate liner. And what that does is it collects and captures any liquids that are a byproduct of the garbage. And rather than have that soak into the ground, it captures that and then moves it into a leachate pond where it evaporates. And then they are going to be building another retention pond below that, just in case, you know, if you have a quarter century or half century storm, that it doesn't overflow the leachate pond. There's a way to capture it again.
Okay. Yesterday, it sounds like you may have spent some time in closed session discussing the Oscarthorpe farm acquisition, but even if you didn't, I mean, will you be able to finalize the agreements by the council's October 10th meeting?
I am confident that we'll be able to do that by the October 10th meeting, and then we'll have a press release available at that time.
Okay,
and we're really working diligently with the landowner, Summit Land Conservancy, Cheryl Fox and her staff, and, of course, our staff. So
we're talking about two agreements, one for basically a payment and then a second one for access, and we're still talking about just wintertime access here, right?
Yes. And we'll have more information available on that on October 10th.
Also, a discussion yesterday about extending Chalk Creek to the Mirror Lake Highway. County's moving forward with this project?
Well, we don't know that we're moving forward with it yet at this point. There's some due diligence we need to do. This was proposed by the county commission back in the 1970s, and right-of-ways were actually purchased at that time, so those are in place. Apparently, they did put in a real rough gravel road, at least in several sections of it. But that's, from what I understand, is quite grown over at this point. So we want to look, you know, to help spur economic development in that part of the county. We want to look at a connection there. It's also a safety issue for people living in that out on 150 in the northern part of the county, having quicker access to Salt Lake City and another access out of the area for emergencies.
Yeah, and I certainly haven't been up that far, so I have no idea how many people we're talking about that this could impact in terms of residents living along Chalk Creek. Will they have an opportunity to have some input here?
Certainly. This is just a first step to take a look at what it would really entail. So we're going to be doing a tour of the area on October 10th prior to our council meeting. And Derek Radke will be hiring a consultant to do some basic surveying work and then provide a cost estimate on what we would be looking at. And, of course, it would just be a rough estimate because we don't even want to invest the money at this point in getting a solid bid. But we'll look at the rough estimate and then just look, you know, we have no idea what that figure could be. If it's in the tens of millions, I think the answer is probably that we'll just leave that project for now, or maybe we'll work on it slowly in sections. We just have to wait until we see the survey work and if it's even feasible to really put a road up there. And then, of course, the cost will be a big factor. And then we want community input.
Okay. The council was scheduled to approve some sort of annexation to Mountain Regional. Anything worth noting there?
This is something we actually addressed last May. It's the property. They're going to be building a small hotel. It's in the Frostwood area of the Canyons Village, and it's approximately 21 units that would be hooking up to Mountain Regional. I don't even know if this has been is an actual approved project, but of course they do have to prove that they have access to water before they can move forward with an application. So apparently when it was brought to us before, there was a 30-day period when they had to get this to the state, and that did not happen. So we have to go through the process of approving this again.
All right. Let's see. Save Our Stage Foundation made a request for a property tax exemption for its new space under the Park Guide. Did the council rule on that request?
Yes, we did, and we denied the request. And I think every single council member was disappointed that we had to take that position. But it's very clear in the state tax commission rules that the property, if it is a non-profit or a 501c3, that they need to file within either 30 days of the purchase or by a date in March. And both of those were missed. And then there's also a requirement that the land, whoever, the owner of the parcel, be available for, questions and things during the hearing, and we didn't have a representative there, which was disappointing, but I don't know if it could have changed the outcome because, I mean, the rules were very clear. There is an opportunity potentially then after they pay them to request an abatement of the taxes. And we look at that very carefully because if we do an abatement, it can definitely set a precedent. So we want to be sure to, again, we would only do that if there was a really good reason why they didn't meet those deadlines.
Okay, so in terms of, having to meet it within 30 days of the purchase or by a date in March, I mean, is there another opportunity this coming March to do that, or that
has come? Oh, yeah.
Okay.
This is just for this year's taxes. So hopefully they'll get all their paperwork in, which I believe they can do even now for next year. So they'll be considered then a nonprofit move going forward.
Okay. Let's see. Finally, a discussion with regard to the memorandum of understanding to work with the Forest Service on sage grouse. What did you guys decide on this?
Well, they're doing some work in the state with the Forest Service, looking at sage grouse habitat, and we did feel like even though we don't have a lot of area within our Forest Service boundaries that are great sage grouse habitat, we do have some very successful leks within the county as a whole, and we just decided we would like to have a seat at the table to monitor those discussions and have input. So this was really just a form document that all participants and cooperating agencies have to complete. So, again, it just gives us a seat at the table during those discussions and process.
Okay. Anything come up during council comments, manager comments, or public comment?
No, I know a lot of people were interested in the our discussions with PLPCO and looking at the areas within the Forest Service boundaries that are currently considered roadless. And we had a meeting with PLPCO last Friday afternoon, and that's the public lands policy coordinating office underneath the governor's office up at the state. So we were most concerned with some of the definitions that they provided for us to classify our roadless areas, if it was other than what it is now, and they had a designation for that called primitive. And then they had some steps above that, and there were four different definitions. And we felt there were some things in the next step up that although we would like to provide some opportunities to go in and do some forest restoration and possible timber harvesting for to reduce fire fuels and create enhanced watershed areas that, you know, they had some language regarding mineral lease, and we weren't sure if that meant new mineral lease opportunities, which we, you know, wouldn't support. So we're looking at that carefully, but they are going to be providing us with some additional definitions, and then we will be holding a hearing so we can get public input. It'll be either on October 10th or most likely October 24th. Our 10th agenda is getting pretty full. Okay. As Tom said, I think we're going to be getting breakfast, lunch, and dinner at that meeting.
Okay. All right, Kim, I appreciate your time. Thanks.
Sure. Thank you.
That's Summit County Council Member Kim Carson. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:31. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Moab City Council recently instituted a ban on plastic bags that does not go into effect until next year. On the phone to talk to us about that, I have a member of the City Council, Ronnie DeRossery. Good morning to you.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for being with us. As you know, this is something that Park City instituted last year. Why was it something the Moab City Council wanted to do?
Well, I should first thank you guys in Park City, because Park City has been really helpful to us, Salt Lake City as well, in terms of some of the advances we've been trying to make in terms of sustainability. And so we've been in contact with your mayor and with your sustainability director about some changes we can make, and that had some impact on some of the goals that we recently set for sustainability, renewable energy. And we've also had a long history of having a prior mayor who was here for a long time, and now our current mayor, who had commitments to sustainability, and we felt like this was something that fit well into our goals and our general plan and some of our other sustainability goals.
Okay, and I think I'm correct that it actually doesn't go into effect until, what, January 2019?
Yeah, January 1st, 2019, and we passed it on September 10th of 2018.
Okay, so are we talking about all stores in Moab or just like here?
Yeah, so we did look at the example in Park City, and we can totally understand why Park City did theirs the way that they did, and we're grateful to you guys for setting an example. And when we looked at it and the size of our community and our residential base and also, you know, our tourist base, we felt like we could, since Park City had gratefully put their foot out there, and taking it on to start with your three main large stores, and with the hope of advancing it, that we could take the next step in our community by trying to deal with all retail in our community.
So what's the reaction been from local businesses?
It's been really good. I would say of the reaction we've gotten from the public and businesses, probably emails and conversations I've had with people have been in favor of the ban, like on a 9-to-1, 10-to-1 ratio. Our Chamber of Commerce is in favor. Our biggest store in the community, City Market, is actually on task to do away with plastic bags throughout the City Market chain by 2025. So generally, it's been really good. People have some questions, which we're addressing, but generally, it's been really good.
Right now, and the stores themselves, then, if people don't bring one, they'll a bag themselves, they'll charge somebody to haul
their
stuff
away? Well, that's up to individual stores to do that, and I think they'll all have to make a decision about whether they want to do that or not. They can still use paper bags or reusable bags. We have some stores in the community already that offer boxes, you know, from packing that they already had. So those are all options, and there are some exceptions in the ordinance that allow still for certain plastic bags under 2.25 milliliters millimeters that deal with certain products. If, you know, if you're going in and you're individually bagging you know, if you're buying nuts or if you're bagging produce or buying meat, there are exceptions like that I think are somewhat similar to exceptions that you guys have.
Right. Has Moab seen any problems with plastic bags? I mean, have you got bags floating in arches or, you know, along slick rock? Or is it just it was the right thing to do?
You definitely do see them in a lot of places. We have some really dedicated individuals who work for a long time, both kind of on recycling and waste reduction issues, but also beautification and trash cleanup in the community. And they will tell you the ridiculous number that they end up picking up. But we've also had with wind blowing, I mean, we have a lot of problems at our recycling center with them all over the place, but you'll also see them. We have our larger, our landfill is located north of Arches, and there are definitely times, even though it's tucked over a hill off of Highway 191, where the wind will kick up enough where you'll find grazing fences on the other side of the highway just coated. I mean, it's not just plastic bags, but other lightweight pieces of plastic that are just blowing. And you can find that, you know, in neighborhoods and along creeks, too. So that was part of the impetus for our concern.
Yeah. And I've had people tell me that they won't shop at our local stores anymore because they want the plastic, because they want the plastic bag for other uses, mainly, I'm guessing, to pick up after their dog. In Moab, you really don't have an opportunity to go anywhere else. Right? I mean, it's not like...
Oh, well, obviously, the city only makes that part of our immediate valley. So there is we do have the county bordering more on the south side. So obviously, this ban doesn't apply to county businesses, and it'll be up to the county to decide what they want to do.
Okay. You know, hard to believe, I know, but I hadn't been to Moab in like 15 years. I was just there this spring. I was mostly surprised by how many new hotels there were, as well as the traffic on Main Street. In terms of population growth, I mean, have you grown that much, or was it really just an increase in your tourist destinations?
If you look at our population numbers, they're actually relatively stable. I mean, it's gone up maybe a few hundred, but our tourist season is getting longer, and what you're largely seeing is growth in lodging. We have some residential growth, but it's relatively small by comparison. And I don't know what weekends you're here, but we can have weekends where even though the city population is a little bit over 5,000 people and Grand County's population is about 10, you could have easily tens of thousands of people in the community. And I think in some ways, that's similar to Park City, too, because of the events that you guys have and just visitation for public lands.
Yeah. Do you have any idea in terms of the number of growth, in terms of the tourist population?
I know that this year, for example, when we look at numbers, and if you talk to, say, Arches National Park or some of the retailers, we've been on a pretty steady growth increases of 10 to 20% in visitation for the last several years, which is huge.
Yeah. And as a result of that, though, I mean, I think you see, like we've seen here, is that we have very low unemployment, a lack of affordable housing. How has Moab dealt with those issues?
Yes, that's a huge ongoing challenge. I don't think there are any easy solutions, probably like you guys are finding. So we're just trying to attack that on a number of different levels. We have, I think one of my colleagues was saying 250 open jobs at the moment. Part of that is we all keep coming back to is our struggle with affordable housing, and we're trying to attack that on multiple different levels. Everything from looking at ways where we can bring more deed-restricted housing into the community and policies like assured housing, or what some people call inclusionary housing, where if you're building structures over a certain size, and we went through studies to see what would qualify, let's say you're building a large hotel, that a percentage of that, you would have some options. We haven't finalized the policy, but what might happen is you might then be asked to provide a certain number of units of affordable housing, to put a certain amount of money into as a fee, into a pool for affordable housing. But there are also issues that we're looking at. The city has made a recent commitment to put money into property within city limits downtown that's currently being used for low-income housing and to keep that low-income affordable. So we're making a financial commitment to get into that game as well. And then we're trying to work in conjunction with a lot of our employees that are just having trouble finding housing. I mean, we as a city are having trouble finding and then retaining people working for the city because of just the cost of our housing. So we're working with the school district and with the hospital. And, you know, it's a struggle for us for, in general for some of our city jobs, but, you know, in our police department. So we're looking at all options, but there's, yeah, as we've learned over the years, there's no one bullet solution. So we're trying to attack all the possibilities at once.
Okay, well, good luck with that, Ronnie. And again, if people headed to Moab as of January, don't forget your reusable bag, right?
Yes, thank you very much. And yes, and there, you know, in some places you'll be able to find boxes, but reusable bags are great, and there will be some available for sale. And we're also trying to make sure that we have some programs in place for things like, you know, you can take a bag with you, bring it back the next time, leave it for someone else in various places. So we're working with a lot of great community groups that are helping make that happen, too.
Okay. Hey, thanks for your time this morning, Ronnie.
Thank you very much.
That's Moab City Council member Ronnie DeSaria. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPs. Well, Utah Climate Week is coming, and it runs October 1st through the 7th. In the studio to tell us about some of the events to celebrate Climate Week, I have Park City Environmental Sustainability Project Manager Celia Peterson. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So I guess we start with dumpster days at Recycle Utah. Is that where we're
weekend? Yeah, Recycle Utah has a lot of activities that fall this week. So there's dumpster days, there's the hazardous waste collection, there's Harvest Fest on Saturday, I believe it's the 6th. So, and there's a composting lunch and learn, I believe that's on Tuesday or Wednesday. I can't remember off the top of my head, but yeah, lots going on at Recycle Utah. Then we've organized a lot at the city and with other partners. Another kind of kickoff event that's a little bit earlier than actual Climate Week on Friday. It's the last Friday gallery stroll. And a lot of galleries have organized to display environmental art to go along with Climate Week. And then on Monday, we is the official kickoff of Climate Week, and we will start by giving away free conservation kits at the library. So if you would like one of those, you are welcome to come in between 10 and 12 at the library, pick one of those up, and that contains a lot of items that you can do to seal up the leaks and cracks and keep your home cozy this winter. On Tuesday, we will have a regenerative agriculture walk at the White Barn. That starts at 7 o'clock. Thursday will be a really big day for us. We have the Park City Living Future Symposium that happens from 2 to 4. That requires an RSVP, so if you'd like to attend that, please email energy at Park City. That goes from 2 until 6. Then that evening, we've partnered with the Sundance Institute and Park City Film Series to bring a free screening of a movie called A Notes Arc. It's a beautiful movie that's about the island nation of Kiribati in the Pacific Ocean that's experiencing a lot of land loss due to ocean level sea rise that is an impact of climate change. We'll have a panel discussion immediately following the movie about on the topic of environmental justice. And yeah, I could tell you about the panelists there if you like.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. So Representative Angela Romero will be there. She has a strong interest in environmental justice. Daniel Mendoza from the U will be there. He's got a strong interest in research focus on public health and environmental justice. Then our own Luke Carton will be there. He's has some interesting parallels about mountain towns and island communities. The focus of the discussion will really be what our collective responsibility is towards climate change and talk about some solutions.
Okay. The Park City Living Future Symposium, you said it's happening from 2 to 6 at the library. Tell me what's happening there.
Yep. So the Park City Living Future Symposium, that we've organized with the Living Future Institute and a firm in Salt Lake called Arch Nexus. And basically what the whole premise of that is, if you've heard of the Living Building Challenge or the Living Community Challenge, ILFI is the organization that's brought those forward. But it's really looking at how we can design a future that does good for people in the environment rather than focusing on doing less bad. So it's pretty interesting. I'm excited for that one.
So is it kind of an open house or is it actually happen from 2 to 6?
It actually happens from 2 to 6, right. And that's the one that you should RSVP for. So okay. energy@parkcity.org.
Yeah. Okay. And that's going to be upstairs in the Santee or is it going to be...
It depends how many people we actually have sign up. So I've got room 101 at the library reserved right now. So
okay. We also had the Three Tenors of Climate Change, but that was so big that you had to move it to Salt Lake?
That's organized by Summit County, and that's correct. It's they wanted to have something that a lot of students could attend and something that more people could attend and get there using public transit. So that will be at the Salt Palace, I believe, on Thursday the 4th.
Okay. Anything else?
Yeah, if you would like a calendar of all of the local events that are happening, you can go to parkcity.org and look on environmental sustainability page, or you could just send an email to energy at parkcity. I'd be happy to send a calendar and answer any questions.
Okay, energy at parkcity.org.
Yep.
Okay, Celia, thanks.
Thank you. Have a good day.
KPCW News Time now, 8:47. It's the local news hour on KPCW. It's 8:48. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, coming up on Friday, the opening lecture of this year's Utah History Lecture Series. It'll be held at 4 o'clock at the Park City Library Community Room on the third floor. Giving that lecture is Weber State University Professor of History, Dr. Gene Sessions. He joins me now on the phone. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for being with us. The title of your lecture is The Territorial Government of Early Utah and Its Governors. Why do you think it's important that people understand the history of our territorial government in the state?
Well, there are a couple of things that make our territorial history unique. One is it lasted for so long. Utah was probably ready for statehood many years before some of the states surrounding us got to be states. And so the territorial period lasted for 50 years, and it was a very interesting time with lots of conflict and lots of controversy. So it was a very interesting time, and a Utah that most people today wouldn't recognize. Very different place.
Yeah. So how did how does a territorial government differ from a state government?
Well, the territorial government is largely a fiefdom of the national government. The governor is appointed by the president, and the territories administered under the Department of Interior. So you might think of a territorial government kind of like we think of Indian nations today. They have a certain degree of sovereignty but operate under the auspices of the federal government. And then the idea is that while you have that period of territorial tutelage, you develop your population, you develop your infrastructure, and then at whatever point you become ready for statehood. But the founders of our country did not want territories to be like the colonies had been to the British, and so they wanted new areas in the West to grow up, to be full faith partners with the older states to the East. And so we developed this system. It worked very well. Original 13, we've added 37 states on this process.
So why did the Utah's territorial government last so long? Did it have to do with the fact that the state was settled by Mormons?
Yeah, it had to do with what commonly in the 19th century folks called the Mormon problem. There were a number of issues there. Of course, there was the polygamy problem. Most Americans found polygamy to be odious and probably more significant underneath the surface of that hot-button issue was the control that the Mormons had over the politics of the territory, being in a very large majority, shrinking as the century went on, but still in a large majority, the Mormons were going to be able to control whatever government came along. And so as long as territorial status remained, there was hope for folks who were not Mormons to continue to have some influence in what happened in the territory, with help from Washington and other allies who were nervous about the block voting of Mormons. Mormons were almost entirely Democrats. That sounds strange these days, but they were. And so the Republican majority in Congress is very reluctant to admit Utah as a state as long as there seemed to be this lead pipe cinch that it was going to become a new Democratic state. So there were a number of those kinds of issues, a lot of suspicion about how the Mormons were controlling everything in Utah, not just the politics, but the economy, and just seemed very un-American. And so the Republican Party in Washington very strongly opposed Utah statehood, and six attempts to get statehood beginning way back in 1849, rejected by the national government. Finally, in the 1890s, as the people of Utah were willing to make a lot of concessions, statehood came along, and we became a new state in January 1896.
Yeah. I didn't go to fourth grade here in the state of Utah, but that's where you learn about state history.
Yeah.
But I do know that Fillmore was Utah's first capital. Why was it chosen instead of Salt Lake?
Fillmore was chosen because it was geographically the center of the vast territory, which ran all the way from the Continental Divide in Colorado to what is now the western border of Nevada. This was the territory of Utah established in 1850 by Congress. And if you look at that and draw a bunch of lines through it, it lands on Fillmore. And so the idea was that that would be the center of this big state or this big territory as it was being organized. And so that's why they decided on Fillmore. It didn't work out very well because the population center remained along the Wasatch Front. And it was very difficult for the folks to get down to Fillmore to run the territorial legislature and to run the territorial government. So it only lasted there really for a couple of years.
Okay. Any other colorful or frontier or pioneer stories about entering statehood that you want to share with us now?
Yeah. You know, Utah has a very unique territorial history because of the fact that Utah was settled by this group of communitarian, millennialist, religious folks, unlike any of the other territories around us. And so we just had lots of interesting conflicts and clashes, and the two sides, the Mormons and what were referred on both sides fondly as the Gentiles, lined up against one another, and there were just all kinds of interesting clashes and problems that occurred as both sides jockeyed to try to gain, some leverage on the other. And what finally happened, of course, was that the non-Mormon population got the help from the federal government to take away the right to vote and hold office from Mormons. And so gradually in the 1880s, became clear that the Mormons were going to lose their control. And so they said, all right, we'll make a deal with you. We'll abandon polygamy, and we'll also be willing to guarantee parity. And so the Mormons divided the Mormon people between the two political parties and literally ordered people to join one party or the other. And I think that's the most colorful story in all of probably American history about politics. That you actually had a group of people who could be told which party to vote for. And so the Mormons divided into the two parties, and Utah became a state.
Well, I don't know. I was going to say there's still some parallels, it seems to me, in terms of those blurred lines between church and state.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. There was no line between church and state as far as the early Mormons were concerned. In fact, for the first decade here, the 1850s, the same people who were running the church were running the state, literally. The governor was Brigham Young. He was the president of the church. All the high officials in the territory, in the legislature, were Mormon officials. And that was all changed with the Utah War episode in the late 1850s, where President Buchanan ordered all that to come to an end and appointed a governor from out of the territory. And there began this long struggle to try to break that down. Now, one could argue, you asked earlier, why is this important for Utahns to understand? One could argue that given the way the electoral system sets up in particularly rural areas of our state, the most prominent people in these rural communities are typically leaders of the local church. And so they wind up being in the state legislature. They wind up being very powerful people. One could argue, and even under state government, the church has unusual power because the elected officials tend to be the leaders of the church in these local communities.
Well, again,
we got a very different place here.
We do.
It really is.
And people can find out a lot more. Again, Dr. Gene Sessions' history of professor with Weber State University, will be giving the opening lecture of this year's Utah History Lecture Series. It starts at 4 o'clock, again on the third floor of the Park City Library. Appreciate you spending some time with us this morning.
Happy to do it, Leslie. Hope we have a nice crowd to come out and join with us for this. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. KPCW News Time now, 8:57.